Okay, so I'm recording this so that I can put it on my website, because I'll talk about why you should do that. And I'm hoping the recording will work okay. If it does, you will be able to get the audio in all of its hi-fi glory shortly, whenever I get it up there. So I'll start off, the way I'm structuring this, I don't have handouts. I'm going to put all my slides on my website. In fact, they're already there, and that's where I'm getting them from. And I'll tell you how to get to them, all that sort of stuff. And the reason I don't have a lot of that sort of stuff and the slides aren't particularly slidey is that I want you to ask questions at any point, and we can take this off in any direction that interests you over the course of the thing. Of course, I have a direction I want it to go in, and since I'm standing at the front, I get to push a little harder than the rest of you, but we'll see how that goes. So feel free to ask questions at any time. Probably raise your hand. You know, I don't want it to turn into Parliament or everything where people are yelling at a great opportunity. The Ottawa people will like that. So I'll start off asking a question. How many of you have a website already?
I have a domain, but I haven't done it.
Okay. So you don't really have a website, but you're on the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So why are you here?
I didn't make it myself.
Okay. So you have a website. That's a good thing to do. Do any of you understand what my shirt is about?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Sort of. Okay, I'll get to that. No, because that's not what it's about. So you will understand what this shirt is about by the end of the... this is Jean. She's from BC. She helped organize the whole conference. Yay! We all just introduced ourselves, so I had to bring you in.
Well, now we just stopped the meeting.
Yeah. So you will understand what this shirt is about very shortly, but I wore it for a reason. Yes?
Is it a reference to Wolfshot?
No.
Can I say?
You can if you want.
RSS is really simple syndication, so it's a way to get a feed from your website so that when you put a change up, it gets broadcast to everybody who subscribes.
If you look carefully on the conference website, you'll see one right there.
And do you happen to know the SFP password so that...
I'll give you the piece of paper. I'm probably not supposed to, but I don't think they'll actually kill me. So it's there. Anybody else? Anybody else have a laptop they're running? No, don't worry about it. Okay. So anyway, yeah, that's the microphone. I'm recording it, and I put it on my website. I already said that. So you know, here's the site. I will encourage you to, if you have access to the web or whatever else, to check this periodically over the course of the conference in case something else like this happens, something gets canceled or moved or rescheduled. It should get posted up there with any luck. And that would be one way to get a hold of that. And if you subscribe to this RSS feed, you would get it automatically. I'll get to that in a minute. I'm just going to show you some of the websites I'm involved in, which will explain why I'm talking about this, because I'm involved in way too many websites. This is obviously the conference website, which I helped build. This is the main EAC website with my little... you are at the website meeting, by the website workshop, if that's not the right one. I manage the BC section here. So not the whole website, but this bit here. This is my own website at penmachine.com. This is where I'll put links to my slides and stuff. I'll probably have a shortcut like penmachine.com/conference. I'll make that up at the end and make it happen later. This is my employer, Maverick, who's generously letting me take the afternoon off to come here. We make software for ocean shipping companies, and the software runs on the web. They're web applications that, you know, little tiny companies like Shell Oil and other ones like that use to help manage their cargoes and arrange which ships go where and how much money they owe to other people and other people owe to them. And this company's about 6 years old, and we're here just by Science World in Vancouver. One of the things I do on here is write all the posts in the company's daily blog, which the company has, and not a lot do. And, of course, we have RSS feeds, and I will explain that. This is another one for my band. This is me here in my costume. There's also a whole bunch of other photos you can get at. Let's see. This is my favorite one from this year. That's me. This is is another one I've recently got involved with called Inside Home Recording. Because I'm a musician, I've also recently started co-hosting this program, which basically looks at how to record stuff at home, audio things. So I'm involved in a whole bunch of those things. And I'll link to all that stuff. And we need developers as my work, so that's why I posted that. Okay, so let's get all that out of the way. Here's my actual slides. One thing I will say about these slides is they're not in PowerPoint. They are, in fact, one web page. Blah, 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 with a bunch of stuff in it that's got some tricky stuff going on that makes it look like slides. So this is actually on my website. It's not on this computer. It's not on that computer. I'm just going to my website. So you will be able to go to these slides, and they will be exactly the ones that I used for here. I don't know how much sense they will make, but you could listen to the audio or page along if you want. It does anything for you. So again, my website's here. Website for the conference is here. Pen machine. Sorry. If I'm blocking, please let me know.
Do I click on
the website
for that?
So, you can click there. I will have links to these slides on penmachine.com tonight. So what I'm here to talk about is building your own website in 15 minutes or less and then making it work. Now, why we scheduled 3 hours to talk about something that's supposed to take 15 minutes, you'll find out. I'm going to talk around the subject, but we actually are going to build a website in 15 minutes. We might even do two. We'll see. Okay. So, I'm going to just do it. I'm going to go through the building the website, and then I'm going to talk about why you'd want to do that. I mean, I presume most of you can figure some of that out, but I'm going to go get into the meat of it and actually do it. If any of you were at the February meeting of the BC branch, presumably any of the people from Ottawa and Indiana and Prince Edward Island weren't, but or if you listened to the version of it I put on the web, you will have heard some of this before. Sorry you had to pay money this time. But there will be other stuff that you didn't hear. So there are many, it used to be, when I first talked to EAC about websites about 3.5 years ago, it wasn't that easy to do, and my recommendation at the time was you really need a website, and you probably need to hire somebody to make one for you. Not for a lot of money, something really basic. That's no longer true. In fact, it wasn't even really true then, but it's gotten easier. And the key thing that you need to do in order to make this happen is to, and this is difficult because I know you're all editors, you have to let go of the perfectionism. You have to be less type A about it. You have to, because the thing about a website is, if you want it to be perfect before it goes up, you'll never have one. You're never going to have a website if you're waiting for it. And in fact, this is, even big companies have discovered this. You can't sort of say, okay, we're going to relaunch our website. We're going to rebuild the whole thing. In fact, EAC did this, and it took like, what, 4 or 5 years to get anything to happen? And then when I looked at it, I saw a whole bunch of stuff that was wrong in many, especially technical ways, but it's too late now because they did it all in one big blob, and so we just got to live with it. So that's the problem, is that if you want to do it all, and you know, if you want to make your ideal editor's website, it ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen that way. So the way you do it is you just do it, sort of like many other things in life. If you just start... in fact, I was discussing with somebody on the web, not really in person, yesterday. They were asking, you know, what when people talk about a learning curve, I mean, they say a steep learning curve or a shallow learning curve, what does that really mean? Because if you think of a steep learning curve, ideally, if something's a really steep learning curve for something, it's really hard to do and figure it out, but once you've got it, you're done, and it should happen really fast. And the shallow learning curve might take a really long time. And I think websites are more like a shallow learning curve. I don't think the analogy is that good, but you can start right away. A shallow learning curve is, a steep learning curve is, for example, learning to tie your shoes when you're 6. It's really hard when you're 6, but once you've got it figured out, you're done. Once you've figured out how to tie your shoes, you've figured it all out. So the learning curve is really steep and short. A shallow learning curve is, here's a good example for me, learning to play the guitar. You can find out how to make a note on a guitar and maybe play a couple chords fairly quickly. But there are people who spend their whole lives trying to get good at it. Websites are more like that. You can get a website together really fast now, and it'll be good enough. And that's what my thing for you is. good enough is good enough. It's better to have something than nothing. Because if you have nothing, all that will come up is whatever people happen to find out about you on Google, and that might not be what you want. So, anyway, here are some examples of ways that are really easy to build a website. I'm going to show you the first two, and the other ones I'll just discuss. Blogger is a website which is owned by Google, which, if you look at it, it says, create your blog now. Basically, create yourself a website right now, and I'll show you how to do it in 3 steps, but not yet. I'm used to the Mac, so I'm not sure what the keyboard commands are. All right, I guess I gotta do this the other way. Alt left arrow. Okay, fine. All right, so Blogger's one. WordPress is another one. My blog, it's free. Have a go, set it up. Get one right now. There's big buttons that show you that. So we'll get to that too. There are other ones. There's a service, Canadian service actually, called Domain Direct, which has a more confusing website. Essentially, it's a way to get yourself a domain, and they'll set up the website for you, and you can start a blog and do all sorts of stuff.
So what's the difference between getting a blog and getting a website?
Good question. There is no difference. A blog is a website. Not every website is a blog, but every blog is a website. And I think you should have a blog because it really all a blog is a website that's really, really, really easy to update. So you don't have. It used to be that you had to, go in and edit your website manually, and you had to know all the code, and you had to write stuff, and know how to get it on the server. A blog, basically, you usually either you run a program or you sign into a website and you type something and you say publish and you're done. And that's all. And what that means is usually a blog is a website where there's a bunch of sort of discrete articles or posts, and the most recent one is at the top, which is convenient for people coming to your website. So my website is, in fact, exactly that. In fact, I think all those websites I showed you. Oops. Thank you. I should set up 4ws.penmachine.com. So mine is exactly that. If you go to my homepage, this is what I talked about today, and this is what I talked about yesterday, and these are what I talked about 2 days ago, and this is what I talked about last week. It goes on and on.
You can hook up links and everything to your blog.
Yeah. You can, in fact, I'll show you how that works, but any blog, I mean, a blog is a website. It's a web blog, it's a web journal, it's whatever it is. But it's a website, and it's just a really easy website. So my point today is to get yourself a website in 15 minutes, you should set up a blog. Because it's a way for you to publish stuff in a structured format that people can read easily and get at easily, and you don't have to do a whole bunch of work to make it work. The problem with websites the old-fashioned way is you get to be all type A about it. You can make it any way you want, provided you have all the technical skills and ridiculous patience and all the time in the world. So you all have that, right? Okay, good. So if you have all the time in the world and you want to learn all the programming code and you want to build your website exactly the way you want it without having to hew to anybody's standards about how a website should be put together or at least being able to control it entirely yourself, then you can just go do it manually. If you actually want to get one done, we'll make you a blog, and that's what we're going to do today. So I'm just throwing these out. All these links, again, are on my website, so... something that's fairly recent is Apple iWeb is actually a piece of software, if you have a Mac, that you can buy. Comes as part of the iLife suite. Comes on all the new Macs. And it's a way to make a website. It's not actually a very good way, in my opinion, because it ties you to a particular machine. Most websites and blogs, you can edit them from anywhere. You can go to any internet cafe. I'm going to do it here on this machine, which is not mine. And you can do that anywhere. So it's very convenient. You can go to your friend's house and update your website. Software like iWeb, and there's other ones that are called like Userland Radio, and there's a few other ones that need a piece of software that you're running on your computer, and usually they enslave you to your particular computer. And if you don't have your computer with you, you can't actually update your website, which is a pain. Yes?
What people editing your website?
Well,
is
that accessible?
It's there, but it still needs a password.
Oh.
You can't, it's just like checking your email on Hotmail. You know, not everybody, it's there, and you can get it from anywhere. There are websites that, it's called a wiki, but we won't talk about that necessarily. There are websites that anybody can edit, and that has a whole other social component that we won't talk about today. There are other services, GoDaddy, Typepad, netferms.ca is one I'll talk about in a little bit. There's hundreds of ones. The first two are the easiest, and they're the ones I'm going to show you today. But there's lots of ways that you can get a website together really easily. So the question, of course, is what is a website? We already kind of addressed this. Really, all a website is a bunch of text files, just like you would create by save as text out of Microsoft Word or Notepad or text edit on a Mac or whatever, just like they are on your computer. They're just sitting on a disk on your computer somewhere. But they're sitting on a computer that's probably in some rack in a building like this one, actually. If there's a big server facility on the 7th or 8th floor of this building, which in fact is where some of the stuff for my work runs. And they have all the diesel generators and backup power and all this stuff so that the website's always running. But it's basically a computer in a rack plugged in with a cable in the back, just like this one, and there are text files on there. And all that happens is when you go to a website and say, I want to go to www.penmachine.com, your computer over the internet says to this computer, hey, I want whatever's at www.penmachine.com. And that computer says, well, if you don't ask for anything else, I give you this particular file, which is usually called index.html or something. And it sends it over the wire to your computer, and your computer looks at that text file and says, well, somebody's written this up so that I'm supposed to put these words on the page, and it's pointing to this image over here, and it wants things in these colors, and so I will make it so. So until your computer gets it, or your phone, or your whatever device, it's just a text file that might point to some other files, and your computer assembles them all together into a page that you can see. And that's all a web page is, and all it has ever been, and all it will, and there may be other things it's connected to. So it's really not that complicated. It's just words, letters of various sorts on a page. And if you look at what, if you've ever done this, view page source or view source, you see something like this. This is the text file that your computer gets. And it gets all, anything in these angle brackets is basically, that's telling it, the computer should read this, but it, no people should see this. And you get down through all the various crap that the computer's dealing with, blah, 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 blah. Looks very confusing, but if you start figuring this out, you don't need to, but it's not that complicated. And then you see some actual words, and you notice that there's like a P here. That means start the paragraph. And then if you get to the end, there's a slash P, and that's telling the computer, end the paragraph. That's about as complicated as it is. So when the text file does that, that means when it gets to the end of the paragraph, it's all crap. That's one of my posts. So that's how this gets generated. And that's all a website really is. And so we get back to the slide, which asks, what's a blog? And a blog is just a website that's really easy to update. What it means is somebody else has written some program so that you don't have to write all that crap. You don't have to write all the brackets and all that. You just type what you want to say, and it drops that into some pre-formatted crap that will display a web page out of it. Now we get to my T-shirt, which says, feed, for the microphone, it says, feed me, RSS, on it. And what you will see is on quite a number of websites these days, and in fact, usually on almost any blog that you generate, even automatically, you get something like one of these symbols, an orange sort of broadcast thingy, something that says RSS or XML. It's usually orange. There's no good reason for that. The internet works like this a lot. It's a lot like English, actually. Whoever first made something up, it becomes the standard. So somebody had this feed thing, which I'll discuss, and one guy said, you know, I really should have a button for this. Can somebody make me a button? And the first guy said, oh, okay, well, here's your button. And he made it orange, so it was easy to see on the page. And there it is. That's what it's become. Sorry?
Dutch person.
Perhaps. Or Ukrainian. You know, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. Most recent.
Yeah.
Or any cause.
Or Florida Orange Board. Or something.
Yeah. Or whatever. It just, I think it's mostly because it was just, oops, we're not starting our timers yet. So you will see on various pages some variation of this. All it is it's actually a slightly different form of that same kind of messy text we were looking at before. If we come over to my page, you will see, mine are a little bit tiny, but you see up here that same little symbol. If you actually click on it, it looks like garbage, but it's a different format. And it's instead of HTML, which is the hypertext markup language that you would normally get on a web page, this is called XML, which is extensible markup language. Essentially, it's a different computer language. And it's a way, it's a computer language. XML is basically just a way that web and computer people figured out to make a text file that you could basically, it's for exchanging data between one computer and another. And the file itself, or another file that it talks to, says what it's about. So that, for example, my company, Navarik, when we work with companies like Shell, they have a ship that is going to be going somewhere, and they generate a voyage information document in their huge mainframe system in London or the Netherlands or Houston that says, you know, here is this ship. They convert it into this XML language, which goes over the internet to our computers, which are basically just website computers. And our computer, because it's formatted in this structured way, is able to interpret that and say, oh, it's a voyage. Now we can add a voyage into our system. Similarly, this another use of this is that RSS thing we're talking about. Really simple syndication. A few years ago, yet again, the same guy who asked for the button, his name's Dave Weiner, said, it would be really nice if I didn't have to go to every single web page that I'm interested in to see if there's anything new. Because if you look at dozens or hundreds of websites that you like, it's a pain to go, oh, well, okay, maybe I'll check out, I'll check out this guy's site and this girl's site and this other person's site, and I haven't checked this one in a while, and somebody doesn't update their site in 3 months, and you just forget about it. What RSS lets you do is it from your website, you can generate one of these XML files. And anytime you do something new, it adds a chunk of text in there saying, there's something new here, and it has a date saying this is when it was updated. And people can subscribe to that so that if I have it in my subscription list, I have a program. There's various ways to do this, but I just have a program that's like an email program. And in fact, you can even do this inside Outlook with a plugin that just keeps track. Every once in a while, it asks that website, is there anything new? And if there is, it grabs it, and you see it there, and it's bold-faced, just like a new email message. So you're able to keep track of, for example, I look at hundreds of websites, and even if one hasn't updated itself in 6 months, when it does, I know, and then I can read it. So that's very convenient. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff you can do with this. You can republish things on other sites. You can glom things together to get a bunch of things on one site. In fact, even on my employer site, why is it doing that? Okay, so on my site, you'll look on the front page, there's this thing that says news, and these are the latest sort of news items. But we didn't actually write a program to grab them from the other part of the website over here. They're coming from here. This is the full-on version of each of those posts. This is a blog that's generated out of some software. It makes itself a little RSS feed, which looks like this. And what we did is we just said, we could, just have it published in two places, or we could write some software to extract things. We didn't do that. We just took some pre-baked piece of software and said, okay, well, let's take the stuff from the blog, from this RSS feed, and let's just republish it, take the RSS feed and turn it back into website and just publish it on our homepage. That was actually easier than trying to publish the same thing in two places on the same website. Yes?
So what format do your subscribers get this updated information?
They get it in that XML RSS format, but you don't really need to know that. When you, there's various...
Is that an email?
What they see, let me see if I can show you an example. There's a service called BlogLines, which does this. And can I log in? Let's see. There's various ways to do this. What do you mean it hasn't been confirmed yet? All right, I may have to ignore that. Essentially, you have a piece of software that's like an email client, and you get just the text of the website update. So you don't get all the formatting around it. You just get the text. And some people publish it so that there's only a summary or the first paragraph, and you have to click, and then it takes you to the website. But what it lets you do is you can skim through a bunch of headlines. It's sort of almost like a wire service. So you get, imagine your email program and the new emails, you get the subject line, and you have to click on it to see what the body is. Very similar to that. So this is very convenient. Now, I'm going into this, it's not really all that necessary for you to know, except that anytime you set up a blog on any of these services, this happens for you automatically, unless you tell it otherwise. Your blog, your website, automatically publishes these summaries that people can subscribe to, which is good, because that means people can read your site more conveniently. So let's get back to where we are in the slides here. Right, I guess I got to reload. Sorry. Okay, back to the slides. So that's about that. How can I possibly get all that together in 15 minutes? Well, we're going to do it right now, and then I'll go on some more. So it is now 1:35. So we need to be done by 1:50. Okay? Okay. So we're going to start off by going to that first one I talked about, blogger.com. You don't necessarily have to take notes here because their instructions are actually pretty good. So blogger.com, this is one of the first services that let you do this. And it started in 1999. And I started using it in 2000, and I'm still using it to run my website. The real hardcore techie people if I were starting now, I would do something different. But I have 6 years of stuff in here, and it's hard to change over, so I haven't bought it. Some people think this is a bit limited. The nice thing about this is that there is no, you don't have to put anything anywhere else. You don't have to set up your own domain if you don't want to. You don't have to arrange anything with any kind of hosting company. You don't have to install anything on your computer. We're going to have it set up here and it will be done and you'll be able to update it. So any suggestions on what I should do first? Okay, good. They've done a good job by having this huge orange thing saying create your blog now. Okay, choose a username. Can somebody suggest to me a username?
Editor.
I will bet you $100 that that's taken. There are something on the order of at least hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people using this service. So
blogger backwards.
Blog. Try. What is that? Can somebody do it for me?
Reg. No,
Regal. Bulger. Okay, I'm guessing this won't work either. I'm going to do a password. I'm just going to make that editors because we're not looking for heavy security here. Retype your password because if you can't type it twice, then it's probably not a good one. Display name
is just one word.
Hmm?
The username is just one.
Username, word. Yeah. Usually, I don't think you can do spaces in it. You can probably do upper and lowercase and stuff like that. I don't know. As a computer guy, I tend to just try doing everything all lowercase because it's easier to type. Display name, we'll make it Editors Conference 2006. The email address, I will use mine so that I can actually get some email. And I hereby sell my soul to you. Let's see if this works.
Does that have to be an email address that's already, you're not creating a new one?
You're not creating a new address. This is one so that it depends. I haven't done this in a while. They might send you a confirmation email, for example, to make sure that you actually exist. So it should be an address that you can. This is your existing address. They don't put it out there on the website.
What if you want a new one that goes with this new site?
That's in what we're going to do right now. That's not possible.
Yeah. But could you link a new email address on there once you built?
You could. Oh yeah, you could. What I'm going to show you is you'll see you. What we're going to get here is not a website that has your own domain right away. It's not going to be, myfabulouswebsite.ca. It's going to be something that belongs to Blogger to start with. There are ways to get around that, and I'll come up with that. But we're doing it in 15 minutes, so we're not doing everything. So here we go. Sorry, this username is not available. I figured I'm going
to...
Yeah, well, let's try... how about Editors Conference 2006? Just make it the same. Okay, EAC Conference 2006. Yay! Okay, that worked. Okay, so we have that. I'll have to remember that at EAC conference. Okay, and then what do we want to call this now? It's a blog. Every time you see the word blog, just think website. What do we want to call this website? Art. Think about that, please. It can be anything.
How to.
Sorry, what was that?
Biff.
Biff. It's now called Biff. You can change this at any time. What you can't change is this next bit. So I'm gonna make an executive decision and call it editor or EAC conference 2006. Now you'll notice here's where the thing is. It's .blogspot.com. This is where Blogger puts your website. Now there is an advanced setup down here. If you get yourself your own website, there are ways you can, and this is what I do, you can set it up so that when you publish from Blogger, it automatically takes the files and puts them on wherever your web server is. And then everything is something you own. In this case, you don't
own domain.
Your own domain, anywhere you want to put it.
So you can see your domain and then that'll go there.
Yeah, we can do that later, or you can do it when you set it up. In fact, I'll show you what it looks like. You still put your blog's title. Listed means does Blogger refer to it? And this information you get here, this is stuff that you can get from when you sign up with somebody who gets you a yourname.com domain. They'll give you most of this information for you to fill in. Essentially, what happens here is that when you set it up the generic way that we're going to do, Blogger puts it on its own computer in its own rack in some facility, and they're owned by Google, so who knows, Mountain View, California, or any number of places. And they own that, and they own the blogspot.com domain. So you're sort of, renting space in that case. If you do it here, instead of just directly going onto their machine, what it does is it generates the text files, and then it ships them off over the internet using this information to some other computer that you have access to that lets them get these files. It's really the same thing. This just lets you do it in your own way. I will talk about that.
If you set that up, will it come on just for half a second and say blogger.com before it goes? Or
no, it just goes right
there.
It just
goes straight.
Yeah, okay. Like my website, you would never know unless I told you that I'm using Blogger to run. Okay, so let's... Oh, Biff. Let me see. Is that the one I did? Yes, I think so. What did I do? 2006 conference. Okay, and then this thing here, VC, you've probably seen these everywhere. This is basically the fault of all the spammers, because one of the things that people do when they're trying to make money off the internet is they set up a whole bunch of free websites like this, and they create software that tries to create them automatically, and then they try and put ads on them and try and get people to link to them. There's a whole problem around that. And what this is supposed to do is prove that there is an actual human being doing this and not a piece of software, because software can't usually interpret this very well. It's one of the things people are good at that computers aren't. But of course what that means is that some of the spammers who are making a lot of money have just hired a whole ton of people in India or China to set these up for them. It's always a bit of a war, Anyway, we won't get too many of that. Continue. I've only got 15 minutes. I can't ramble on too much. Okay, and then you choose a template. So they have a bunch of preset templates. It is perfectly possible, for example, my website, I created the template on my own. If you do have web design skill or you want to hire somebody to do this, they can create you a totally custom template that looks just like yours. But as I said, get out of that anal retentive type A personality and just go with good enough, because you can also do that later.
It's
fine.
Can your web guy, web provider guy, someone you might hire, can he go in later and go around with it?
You can go in later and do pretty much anything you want with any of this. The only thing you're locked into, in fact, I'm not even sure that's true, when you first start is that whatever you picked, .blogspot.com. You can move that to another domain somewhere else very easily, and you may even be able to change that. There's very little restriction here. I mean, you can go in, you can delete everything you've ever written, you can edit everything you've ever written, you can change the design of it, you can move it somewhere else, you can temporarily take it offline if you want, you've got a lot of control, so you don't have to worry. You're not really locking yourself into very much.
If someone is an actually talented web designer,
yeah,
you could say, yeah, can you do something like this afterwards?
And if they're a talented web designer and you say, I've got it running through Blogger, they might go, Blogger. But they'll know what to do. And if they do that, maybe hire somebody else. So you have a whole bunch of choices here. These templates were all created by... Now, it's pretty hard to create a template that can apply to anybody in the whole world who wants to start a website. So they've done a reasonable job here. And in fact, one of these... Sorry.
I'm just going to ask you, for any of those templates that you choose, can you decide what of your text goes into each of those templates?
Not immediately.
That gets preset.
Yeah, when you first do this, in your 15-minute version, certain text goes in certain places. You can change that later, but don't worry about it.
Does it tell you where it's putting?
You'll see. In fact, it'll show you. I'm going to pick this one called Snapshot, and the reason I'm going to pick it is because this guy used to sit at the desk next to me at my company, and now he's gotten way too famous as a web designer, and he left the company, but he's here in Vancouver, Dave Shea, and I'm going to show you some of his stuff later. So you click Preview Template if you want, and it shows you, this is sort of Greek text that doesn't mean anything, but this shows you, when you type entries, they're going to show up over here, like this, and you could put pictures in. Stuff. This will be a thing about you if you actually enter this information. And this will be previous posts we use. So it's all structured for you. And when you enter something new, it goes on the top here. Automatically, the most recent one is underneath, and it also shows up here in the recent posts. The archives get generated automatically. If you had to do this yourself, even if you know what you're doing, if you had to do it manually, every time you updated your website, it would take you an hour. Even if all you were doing was writing one sentence. And I used to do it this way, and I would update my website every 3 months. Now I do it once or sometimes several times every day. And I've been doing that for 6 years. And you can imagine that makes a lot of text. So we're going to pick this one. We could pick any of them. You can change them at any time. You can go in and do your own, whatever. So I'm going to pick that one. Continue. I'll let you guess what it's doing now. Your blog has been created. Okay. And you notice what it does is it doesn't say, go look at it. It says, start posting. What it's telling you is, before you go look at how beautiful your website is, put something on it. And this is the great thing about a blog, is that it encourages you. It makes it dead easy for you to post something on there. And there's no rules about this. You don't have to put something there every day or every week or every year. But what it means is that even if you're building a website and all it is your personal sort of brochure as an editor. When you want to update your website, you just go do it. You go log into this and say, I just edited this big famous book, and here's a link to Amazon, and you use the link that like gives you a cut so that you actually make some money off of it instead of what they paid you to edit it. That sort of thing. I'd say this was an editor's site. You would say, hi, I'm Biff. And I can edit stuff for you.
Yes. We're just spelling the same.
Really? I can.
Professional stuff.
Yeah. Super duper professional. I'll do one S. Okay. Remember, let go of the type A personality. Let it go. I'll show you how you can fix this. So this is what you got there. The preview here doesn't show you what it's actually going to look like on your website. It just shows you, there's going to be a big chunky title, and then there's going to be some text underneath it. This is the typical structure of any blog post. Think of it as sort of a journal entry. There's a title, and then there's whatever's underneath it. And you can do all sorts of stuff with that I'll show you. But so you can save as draft if you don't want people to see it yet. You can click this little thing down here and say, I want to pretend that I wrote this at 12. I want somebody to think I was doing this really late at night, so I wrote it at almost 1 o'clock in the morning today, and I actually did it in April, the 18th. So as you can see, you have some decent control. You could even say that you did it tomorrow if you want. Say, so it says published, and then you can click this button, View Blog, and there it is. Whew, 2 minutes to spare. Okay, that's with all the rambling.
From the moment that you first created the blog, you had a couple of minutes where there was nothing in it.
Yeah.
But someone, meanwhile, could have signed in to see your empty blog, right?
Presumably, if they somehow could have guessed that address that it's at, which is this. Oh, no, sorry, the this. If someone just randomly guessed the existence of that address, yes, they could have. And wouldn't that have been a tragedy? Oh my God, there's a website with nothing on it. Okay. Yes?
Why is there no www
up here? Because www is just a convention that doesn't really need to exist. You can type it if you want. I mean, it'll still get you there. All the www... In fact, I may as well discuss this just so that... Because that's a good question. The way a web address is structured, as you've probably figured out, is the sort of most general... It's almost like a postal address. The most general thing is the furthest on the right. So .com means that it's commercial. I mean, even that is arbitrary. You know, it means it's a website, really. Used to be that that had some meaning. I mean, something still do. If it says .mil, it belongs to the U.S. military. Be careful. If it says .ca, presumably it's in Canada. Although it's not entirely necessary that it is. Used to be that that was more rigorous. Essentially, that's saying that's the top-level domain, they call it. Next to that is usually the thing that you or the service that you're renting from owns. In this case, it's called Blogspot. For me, it's a pen machine that I happen to own and I've, you know, gotten the rights to. Anything before that is, theoretically, in the scheme of things, it's the name of a particular computer within that domain. So in this case, we're talking about, and that's not real, that's the original way it was organized. Really what that means is that's just a particular address. And www, it means World Wide Web. It means this is a website. Because it's quite possible, and when the web was new, it was more common, that it could have been something else. It could have been ftp.penmachine.com, which would have been a file transfer protocol server. And if you pointed at it with a web browser, it wouldn't have known what to do. It could have been another thing called Gopher, which was sort of a precursor to the World Wide Web. Gopher.penmachine.com. And if you pointed at it with a web browser, it would have gone, huh? And you wouldn't have gotten anything back. So originally, the www was just a way to say this is a web server as opposed to some other kind of computer. But given that now everything's sort of assumed to be that, a lot of the time, you know, you can go to my website and just go penmachine.com, and there you are. The www is sometimes necessary and sometimes isn't. In this case, because they've got blogspot.com, they've just put you or us or Biff in this case as the next level over. So it's really just an arbitrary thing. The triple W is, in most cases, unnecessary now. It's a convention. Sort of like what's an analogy to it? It's sort of like saying, front door at 1632 Hastings Street, Vancouver. I mean, it's obvious, yes. You should go to the front door unless it tells you to do something else. But you can do that. Yes?
That's not live, though, right?
Yeah, this is live. This is...
Don't let you do that without paying something?
No, it's totally free.
Oh, really?
This is another reason why it's a good way to do it. This costs you nothing.
Why does it cost nothing?
Because it's owned by Google, and they have lots of money, and, well, there's a reason beyond that. The first reason it was free is because it was built by idealistic internet people who like things to be free. And then they figured out how to make money out of it. And what you can do, you'll notice that if you sign up for this, over time, as you're getting into your administrative interface and stuff, you'll see little things on the sign saying, hey, you know, you can put ads on your site. And that's not just a purely, you know, they're not saying, we want you to put ads on the site. What they say is, you can put ads on your site and we'll give you a cut. Which they will. So if you go to my website...
You have to have a certain amount of traffic and then they make that offer.
No. You can put ads on there with no traffic, and what it means is you just won't make any money. But if you ever get traffic, you'll make some money. And Google will make more, because you don't actually get a very large percentage.
So Google's tracking all the hits to the blog?
Yeah. I mean, that's how Google works in general anyway. They've just... What Google did is that they created a search engine, and I'll talk about this more later too. They created a search engine that indexes all the web pages on the web, and then they figured out a way, hey, we've got all this stuff, why don't we figure out a way to make ads that are relevant to the page that something's on? And that's because I talked about telescopes. I mentioned here, talked about my dad's telescope. And you'll notice there's an ad on the page now for telescopes. Once that thing about telescopes scrolls off the bottom of my home page, there won't be an ad about telescopes anymore. It'll be about whatever I talked about more recently.
So,
no. So they provide this service totally free, no obligation. In fact, you don't even have to.
So how much have you gotten from them on apps?
I have a reason. I have what you would call a moderate to low traffic website. In the grand scheme of things, I get about. This sounds like a lot. I get about 1,000 people a day coming to my website, mostly from random Google searches on because I have so much stuff on there. And I'll talk about why that's useful later. But so I get about 1,000 people a day. And I don't know how many of them exactly. I could figure out how many of them are clicking through ads and stuff. But essentially, about every 6 weeks, I get a check from Google for about $120. Not bad. Pays for my website, right? It takes a while to get that kind of traffic, though. I mean, typically, you set up a web. I mean, if you go to the conference website, I don't know if any of you noticed, down at the bottom here, you can actually see who's visited or how many people have visited. There's a visitor statistics link. So in this case, returning visitors, whatever, page loads, unique visitors is really the number you're looking at, this blue bar. So the website, the conference website has gotten somewhere between 75 and 100 and some odd visitors a day. And this is when the conference is happening, so this is about as busy as it's ever going to be. We don't have ads on there because it's not a commercial enterprise and it's not going to be around that long. But if we put ads on there, maybe depending on, and it all depends on whether people click on the ads. It's not just whether they see them, it's whether they click on them and actually go somewhere. And typically that rate is maybe 0.5%, 1% if you're lucky. And different people pay different amount. It's a very mysterious kind of thing. But essentially, it's dead easy for you to put the ads on the website. So if you want to, if you don't feel uncomfortable with doing that, it's basically free money.
So you don't control who the ads are, but at least they're not flashing format, right?
No, they're
those are unobtrusive.
They're very unobtrusive, and this is why Google is making money hand over fist. Most of their money comes from two sources. It comes from these ads on all people's websites, or it comes from the ads that when you actually go to Google and type something in, conference. These ads over here. Conference call, conference venues, total conference services. I mean, this is kind of general, but if you look for something very specific, you get some very specific ads there, which may be very relevant to what you're doing, and you click on those, and whoever placed the ad has to pay some money, and Google gets the money. So they make, you know, Google makes billions of dollars, and it comes out of this, and it comes out of ads on sites like mine. And I don't make billions of dollars.
But they can't go on your site. You can do it to access your site with your password.
Right. Essentially, you just put a little bit of code in there that whenever somebody loads the page, it goes to Google and says, give me some ads, please.
And you know that thing at the bottom that says last modified?
Yeah.
Can you control that? Or is that...
Because
I did research based on that, and I was just wondering now that they put the time in there, so I just wondering...
Here. This is... remember when I went in and changed what it was?
I mean the thing at the bottom you see on sites last
I do mine manually. There are ways to do it automated, but it's not built into this.
I thought it was done automatically.
Yeah, but here, I mean, this is telling you when it was last modified.
Yeah, I know, but if you didn't understand,
like,
yeah, when you go to somebody's website,
yeah.
You go down the bottom, it's last modified. Is that actually when it was last modified?
Not necessarily. It could be a total lie.
That's interesting.
Don't trust anything on the internet. It could all be a total lie. Yes?
So this is a type and the headings, where it says about me.
Yeah.
I don't want to use me on my website, but, you know, if you said about the owner or about
yeah.
The name.
Yes, in fact, this here is what we entered when we set it up, if you notice. And in fact, I'll show you, once you've set this up, when you go to blogger.com, you can sign in now. So we're already signed in. This is another... So essentially, if I'd signed out, I would need to enter that name and password again. But I'm signed in, and now it gives me, instead of the create your blog thing, it gives you this, and it gives you your blog name, and you can change the settings. So you can go in here and say, there's basically a bunch of tabs, and you can say, this is stuff about the website. Where's the actual profile? Well, I guess that's probably back here, back to dashboard. Oh, yeah. Add your photo here by editing your profile. So you can say, yeah, show my real name, show my email address if you want to be scary. Show which blogs I have. You can add a photograph it says find out how to upload a photo. It really does step you through this stuff. So I'm not going to go through all of it, but you can modify all that. And if you want to get in there and actually change how the web page looks, you can go in and manually change the template. This is where your web designer would help you. This is the same web page style code that we were talking about before. You can go in there and change it from saying about me to about the proprietor or whatever. So you can do that, but as I said, feel free to just go put this up, because although it may bother you that things are not exactly the way that you want, chances are anyone visiting the site is not going to care.
Except
Redditors.
Except
Redditors.
People expect us.
Yes. Well, what I'm saying is you shouldn't have spelling mistakes. Mm-hmm. But if the phraseology of the about me is not exactly what you want, I don't think any of your potential customers would necessarily mind. And you don't have to publicize this website until it's far enough along that it actually has something that's worthwhile to you. It's probably a good idea not to. Set it up, start posting, start doing some stuff, start building some, you know, and what you can do is you can post, in fact, let me go here and I'll go, okay, edit posts. And then we'll go back to that one we just did and you say, oh, I made a spelling mistake. Put the S in, publish. And now it's fixed. So if you make a mistake, you can fix it. And this is the thing about a website. It's always under construction. If you remember those web pages from 10 years ago that said under construction, that's why that was so useless, because any website is always under construction if it's any good at all. If you put up a website and never change it, it's not really any good to anybody. So if you make a mistake, don't panic about it. I make typos when I write these posts all the time. And sometimes people point out to me that I made a typo 2.5 years ago in a particular post. And I go, thanks, I'll go fix that. I mean, you know as editors that it's never perfect, right? And people, unless it's riddled with errors, people are not going to go, oh, I made one typo 2.5 years ago. Can't hire this person. Because you know what? The people who are hiring you, the reason they're hiring you is because they don't even spot those things,
yeah.
Right? And the people who have spotted them tend to be editors. And I don't want editors to hire me. They don't have any money.
If you use this and you used your own name,
yeah,
and it went live right away, is it going to search engine?
Eventually. It'll take a few days or weeks probably.
Because the label of your question is relevant so far as,
yeah,
if you're trying to do something you want it offline to be proved it.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it on there, have it live immediately. Then you come back to more of a cycle. Someone in the meantime search engine you and found this.
The way that generally works, I'll get to you in a sec. The way that generally works is it actually, with a brand new website, Google is not going to index it unless somebody reasonably big like me links to it right away. They will index it eventually. And in fact, if when in your setup, you remember that thing where it said, do you want it listed or not listed? If you say no, that means Blogger's not going to put it in the new blogs today listing or the highlighted blogs. And in fact, there's pretty much no way anybody would find it unless you pointed to it. And if you, one of the secrets about the web, it's not entirely true, but it's mostly true. If you put up a website and nobody points to it and you don't link to it from anywhere, nobody can find it. So it won't show up in Google until somebody links to it. And even if they did, as a brand new website, one of the things Google and the other web search engines do is they say, well, this is a brand new website. It has no reputation. I'm not gonna look at it for a while. And eventually it would show up, but if you set up your site, I mean, if you do this and have your typo in there and then don't do anything with it for 6 months, yeah, it might show up in Google. And, you know, another thing to do is to set up the website and don't put your name on it yet. Set it up, play with it for a while, figure out whether you're actually going to keep updating it, and then change it, and then put your name on it once it's decent enough for you to be happy with. I mean, that's what I did with my website. I just, you know, what you could do with a website. Another thing you could do is just scan your business card and put it on your website and then until you've got something going. But anyway, I mean, you know, we're talking quick and dirty here. And, you know, these, you should go in and edit some of this stuff. It'll help you to get into the template and see what you can do because it's really not that complicated. You had a question.
Yeah, two questions. First is, a few years ago, I remember I just my home computer, I just have a Hotmail address.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember hearing at the time that you're not really taken too seriously by Hotmail.
Yeah.
Is there a similar .blogspot
yes.
Kind of a thing.
There is, although surprisingly not as much as you might think, because there are some very high profile people who have blogs at blogspot.com. The ease of doing it sort of pushes past the inertia of people going, well, you really should have your own domain. It still is worthwhile having your own domain for other reasons. But it's, yeah, there is some, there is some, what would you call it?
Cachet.
Lack of cachet,
yeah.
to having a Blogspot domain. So we'll get to that.
Okay,
yes,
the second question is that you said you could just have it, it'd be useful to just have your brochure or something
yeah.
on there if that's what you wanted. But then the way that it's set up, there are comments and
yeah.
it makes it look like you're going to be posting.
Yeah. Well,
the comments, is that just anybody can randomly put stuff and you have no control?
You can turn those off. In that administrative interface, you can say, no, I don't want comments. And you can, you know, what I would suggest is, you know, if you really want to get into it, you're going to need to make some modifications to what the site looks like. If you go in there and click on that template thing and actually look through what's there, it's not really as complicated as you might think. All you got to do is find the text that says about me or whatever, and if you don't want it there, you can delete it. And things like that. But and you can turn stuff like that off. If all you want is basically your profile there.
Like your work samples.
Yeah.
You know.
What you can do is, in fact, I'll show you the other service I was going to talk about. Because we're going to do it again. We're going to do it with something else. Because there, the other service I was talking about, which is at WordPress.com. WordPress is a similar idea to Blogger. But WordPress originally started as software that you could, that as a web techie person, you could download, install on your own web server, run it all sort of yourself, so that instead of logging into blogger.com, you would just go to your own website and a special address and type in a username and password, and you sort of had control over everything. That's, I mean, it takes a bit of hacking around to get that to work. So people kept asking them, well, why don't you set up something like Blogger where we don't have to think about that? So they did. So if you go to WordPress.org, you can download the software and do all that stuff. Or if you just want to get it working, you go, what's the guess? I'll give you a hint. Okay, get a WordPress blog now. Looks somewhat similar. Let's do our EAC conference. Oh, wow, they make a big type in here. Email address. We'll send your password. See, Blogger didn't actually send us any email at all. But we'll send your password to this address, so triple check it. I like this. I've read and agreed to the fascinating terms of service. I always appreciate web services that have a sense of humor. So here, give me a blog or just a username. It's possible to set up, this is an aside, it's possible to set up a blog at Blogger or here where there are a bunch of people contributing to a single website. And for example, if you have an organization where you have several editors, and they just want to have one website, this is a great way to do it because they can each make their own post that has their name at the bottom of it so you know who did what. But anyway, that's an aside. So give me a blog. And here, same kind of thing, username.wordpress.com. So let's say Biff 2006. Blog title, Biff the Editor. Let's do it like this. What language will you be blogging in? Wow. I don't even know what some of these are. That's really cool. I'm going to say English, just because that's my guess. And here, this is even more clear. I would like my blog to appear in search engines like Google, so I will say, no, not right now. You can change this later. And notice they say here, want to download WordPress and run it yourself? They actually, if you click through this link, you can also go to services that will do the setup for you and give you your own domain and do all that. That one I went to called NetFirms is one of those. So if you want to sort of go sort of halfway here, where you don't want to download, you don't want to get all the techie stuff, but you do want your own domain, you don't want it to be at WordPress.com, and you want some help, there are plenty of these internet providers who will charge you a little bit of money to get that happening. And that's a good way to go as well. And in fact, they can probably point you to some web designers who can help you out. That's not a bad way. What I'm doing here is the totally free, quick and dirty method. I like the way they write things a bit better. It's yours. Before you can start using it, you must activate it. So in my case, I have to go check my email. And fortunately, I do all my email on the web. I do it through Google, too. Oops, but I better spell my own name right. So I go in here, and you're going to be able to see all my email, as well as my spam. So here we go. So you get an email, and it says, to activate your blog, please click the following link. And it does something. It takes a few seconds. Hello? Anyway, while it's doing whatever it's doing, what is it doing?
Well, you could do something offline anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, it's presumably doing its thing. So we've set up one there. The nice thing about WordPress is that in addition to doing those kind of posts, it also lets you easily create pages that are separate from that. So you could say, work samples. And all you do is you have a page and you type in what you want. You can upload PDF files or whatever else, or link to other places where stuff and resources appear.
Blogger doesn't let you do that?
Blogger, no. Blogger is, all it is a blog. It's just, but what you can do is you can make a post that consists of, here are my work samples, and you can link to other things, or a post that is one of your work samples, or a chunk, you know, any. The nice thing about it is it's all chronological and you can point to it any way you want. Or if you have something somewhere else, you can say, here's my latest update, which is this book that I just published, like I said before, and you point to Amazon or whatever. So it does let you do that, but it's a bit clunkier. WordPress is a little more flexible, presuming that it actually... Oh, there we go. Let's log in. So we're going to go acconf. That's 256. Oh, I better look at my password. Oh, after you activate it, you will receive another email with your login. Okay. Basically, this is another way to prevent these spammers from setting up a gazillion blogs. So it gives me this crazy password, which you can change. So, and in fact, it gives me a link to do it from. So I'll go acconference 2006. I just copied and pasted that password. And it has a thing from, okay, so here we are. It's already created things for me. Now, it picks a generic template, but you can change all that. It actually has a little thing here, site admin. There's a link down here. If you're not logged in, this stuff doesn't show up. It just has a login link, which anybody can click, but unless they know your username and password, you won't be able to get in. So I click site admin, or it even has an edit right here to edit that post, and that doesn't appear for anybody except you. So you can do stuff here. It's a similar thing, a little bit different. Again, you do have to learn something here. The best thing I find with any computer stuff is just go in there and start clicking everything to see what it does. So in this case, I would click all these links and I would discover that manage shows me a listing of all my stuff. And in this case, I could say edit. And it gives me a very similar thing to what Blogger did, very slightly different. In fact, it has more, it lets you set up categories, so you could have different things, you know, so you could say work samples and, you know, yoga, whatever else you want to talk about. You can set up an indefinite number of, I mean, there's probably a limit, but it's probably many thousands of things. So you could say, okay, I'm going to change this. I'm going to say, I am Mr. And in this case, if I want to make a link to something, it's as simple as this. I highlight it, and I say link, and it asks me, where is that going to go? I don't even know if I have to put in the HTTP stuff, and I'll say Derek's website, and it even lets you choose, do I want to open this in the same window or in a new window? I recommend same window, because new window usually just annoys people. But and then you say save. And it has this link up here that says View Site. And there it is. Derek showed me how to do this. If I click that, it takes me over to my site. So that's the basics of that. And I think that took us even less than 15 minutes, if I'm correct. Jeez, it's already 2:15. I better get moving. And other things you can do here in the site admin is you can go to the stuff like presentation and say, well, I don't really like that template. Let's try this lovely green one. A calm, relaxing theme. Says, oh, okay, new theme activated. It was as simple as that. There it is. That's the same website.
Can you do the same thing when you're creating your own web page as
yeah.
opposed to a blog? They give you templates?
Yeah. Well, it's a template set. So in this case, for example, if I go to edit, or I go into the editing interface of some sort, that's a really nice template. I haven't seen that one before. If I go in here and here there's a link for write, and it gives you options of which kinds of things to write. So it's write post or write page. And in this case, if I write a page, I could say about me. And there's differences here. You can save and continue editing, which doesn't publish it. You can save or you can publish. In this case, I'm going to publish because I want it to be there.
Once you save it, where does it save to?
Well,
to that particular site?
Yeah.
It doesn't save to your hard drive or anything like that?
No, it doesn't save to you. This is all remote. So I could go to my computer, I could go to another computer, I could go to my friend's house and get exactly this because it's all on the web. And this is a great benefit. So in this case, I don't know how I get to that other page.
The top.
Oh, there we go.
No.
Oh, here, about, yes. So that shows up there.
I think it's the one
it's
the next
about
one.
Me.
About,
oh, about me. Thank you. So those would show up there, and presumably you'd run out of space eventually. But it was as easy as that. So you could put your portfolio in there. Very straightforward. And again, you can go in and change these templates. It's a little more complicated in here than it is in Blogger. But also, any web designer, if you say I'm using WordPress, hey, look, they'll probably go, oh, WordPress, okay. And then they'll... So... Blogger has a bit of a lower reputation than WordPress, but the reasons are technical and obscure and geeky and not really worth discussing. Anyway, so that's two websites within their 15 minutes. Okay, we're back. So, we're back from our break. I hope everybody had a fun time. And now we're going to talk about now what, which is why are we doing this anyway? And I'll ask you a question to start. What is a website for? Actually, wait, stop. That's not the question I'm going to ask. Who is a website for?
Potential clients.
Okay. Any other answers?
People with similar interests.
People with similar interests, sorry?
Potential husbands.
Potential husbands. Not for me, but okay.
Friends.
People who may work for you, yes. Family, competitors. You're all answering very excellently here because very excellent. Sorry. It's for the visitors. And you all answered that way. How great. You're ready to build yourself some websites because all too often when I ask that question to people, they start saying, and usually the reason I change the question is when I say, what's a website for? They say, oh, for promotion or for gathering business or for, showing your resume or whatever. It's for the people who are coming to the site. It's not actually for you, at least not directly. Because the vast majority of the people who are going to be using it are the people who are visiting. It has a purpose for you to do that. But unless it's good for them, it's not going to be any good for you. So that's something to keep in mind. And it's remarkable, it's getting better, but it's remarkable how many websites don't get this, even when they're big. The key example, because I'm a techie guy, I'll give you an example of why this happens for me. Imagine you have a printer for your computer, and you need a new ink cartridge. And say it's Lexmark or HP or whatever. You go to HP.com. And you want to find out what kind of cartridge you need for your printer, because you lost the manual or whatever it tells you. If you get there and you see a bunch of links that say, business and consumer, or imaging division, medical products division, consumer division, you get things like that, and you look at that saying, okay, where do I find my printer cartridge? The reason that's a problem is that the people who put together that website thought of the website in terms of the way the company is structured, not in terms of what people are trying to do when they get there. So a better way is when you get to the website, if it says, looking for printer supplies, and you click there, and then it says, what kind of printer do you have? Do you need a new cartridge? And most of them work that way now, but initially a lot of them. And a lot of this comes out of, especially in large organizations, the website's put together sort of by committee or in the structure of the company. So the, you know, finance and administration division, somebody there runs their part of the website, and then the sales division has another, they sort of have these silos. But the problem is there, chances are the people who are coming to the website don't care how your company is organized. But what that means that is that you have to think, and it's not hard to do, as an editor or as somebody, if you're constructing your own website, you need to come, you need to build it as if you were a person coming. And if you're somebody coming to the website saying, well, I want to know if this person can do some editing work for me, think in those terms. What would they be looking for? What would they want to be able to find out? What would they want to be able to get in order to decide whether I'm the sort of person for them? And another key part of that is to think, people can come into your website anywhere. Because you know when you search in a search engine, sometimes you end up 56 pages deep in some website. So think when you're building your website, and that's why these usual blog template things are usually pretty good. You need to have it so that no matter where people come in, it's sort of like if you had a house, you expect people, you know, to come to the front door and knock on the front door and come in, you know, come into your foyer and take their shoes off, and hang up their coat, and come to the living room and have a cup of tea. A website is sort of like if you had a house and people just sort of randomly dropped out of the chimney or through the bedroom window or appeared in the bathroom, and they don't know how they got there. Yeah, they just teleported in, and they're sort of like, what am I doing in the bathroom? Oh, yeah, there's that soap I was asking about. You know, that's the kind of thing that happens. You know, they type in Herbal Essences shampoo, and they end up on the page on your website where you happen to mention in one post that you like Herbal Essences. In fact, I'll give you a specific example for my website. A number of years ago, let's see if we can find it. Okay. Actually, let's try this even another way. A number of years ago, I noticed through the various ways that I monitor my website that I was getting a lot of people coming to my website looking for this Aero Latte milk foam. And
number one
hit. And here's why. Here's why that was happening and why it's still happening. Back then, when I posted originally in 2002, actually even earlier than that, I posted a link on my website saying, my wife got me this Aero, you know what an Aero Latte is?
No.
It's basically it's sort of the length, it looks a lot like this tripod, but it's basically a battery powder. It takes two AA batteries and it's got a little whisk on the end. And you put it in cold or hot milk and it foams up like a latte. You don't need the big, you know, machine with the steam and all that. It just foams it up like an old milkshake machine, kind of ideal. And, you know, it costs, whatever, $20 or $30, something like that. You can get them even cheaper now. IKEA sells them for $6, some knockoff version. But, yeah, so the original version, I got one. She bought it at the Bay at one of those kiosks that they had set up at Christmas time. They didn't sell them during the rest of the year. So people who had heard of these things were looking for them on the web, and the distributor in Canada didn't have a website. Turns out they're in North Vancouver. They're called Batten Enterprises. The reason I found that out is because I kept getting all these people coming to my website looking for this, and some of them emailed me going, where can I get one of these things? I'm like, I don't know. My wife bought me one. I didn't even go to the store to get it. But, you know, I did a little digging around. Somehow, you know, I went to the Aero Latte UK site and found out that they're distributed in North America. Pardon?
Are you on commission?
Well, I'll get to that. You know, so the post that now shows up is this one that says, a surprising number of visitors come to my site looking for information about this thing. So if you, you know, here are the people that you want. And this is, I don't know if this even works anymore.
Nope.
Maybe not. Batten Enterprises, there they are. Mm-hmm. So this is them. I don't even know if they have a website now. It's only to the Yellow Pages because it's the only place I could find them linked to. But enough people came there finding that eventually that enterprise emailed me saying, we've had so many people come from your website, do you want another free Aero Latte? Okay. So now I've got two.
How many do you need at once?
You need one, but you know, if the old one breaks or if you want to give it to my parents or something. I've got two. But, you know, it's not like I wanted anything more from them. I was just trying to get these people off my back, right? And it's not like there's thousands of them. I just get an inquiry every, like, month or 3 or 4 weeks, somebody would be asking me about this. And my advice to them was, could you set up a website? Because then they'll all get to you, right? And then you won't have to worry about it. But I don't know if they've gotten around to that. Well, I could, but I've got enough stuff to do. And similarly, there are other things. I don't know if this is still true. No, it's not. Used to be Air on Chair Canada, I would also come up very high on the list. And so I had a bunch of inquiries about that. And there's all sorts of bizarre things. And this is because I've been posting whatever comes to mind for me on a particular day. It's like my diary. Sometimes I talk about web stuff. Sometimes I talk about... I posted up articles, you know, a few years ago, my daughter started pestering me and my wife about getting piano lessons. Can't believe that. But she actually started saying, when can I do piano lessons? And I'm like, okay. So we found a piano teacher, and we didn't have a piano. I'm a musician, but I play guitar and drums and stuff. We didn't have a piano. So I said, well, I'm not going to buy a huge, you know, $5,000 upright piano if she turns out to bail out on this in 6 months. So we bought a digital piano. And, you know, being the hardware techie geek, I did a bunch of research and whatever. And so what I did was I wrote an article about it and I posted it on my website. Originally, I did it as a blog post and it ended up really long, so I made it a separate page. And I linked to it from the blog saying, I've got this article about digital pianos. Well, now this isn't going to happen for everybody because my blog's been around for a time. But there we go. Number one, two, three, four. Number five on Google for digital piano. So this is my article. You know, that's the one we bought. Here's all the background I did, the research I did, the various other models I looked at, why we decided on the one we had, all that sort of stuff.
Is she still taking lessons?
Yes, she is. It's almost 3 years later. She's still taking lessons, still using that same piano. So great. It turned out to be a good decision. Yes.
How do you get your website to be so high on the list?
That's what we're going to talk about right now. So. Next slide. Okay, now we'll get to what a website is for. My position is that there are really three things people are trying to do when they get on a website. They're trying to get some information, number one. They're trying to do something useful. So getting information would be, what's the weather going to be like over the weekend? Because I'm planning to go camping. Second would be to do something useful. Manage my bank account. Buy a t-shirt. Chat, send an email to my mother-in-law in Kazakhstan, or whatever. Number three is to have some fun. Play a game, surf around, just find out, watch a funny movie, whatever. This summarizes, as far as I can tell, pretty much anything, you know, in broad sense that people might be wanting to do on the web. The people who use the software that my company Maverick makes are trying to do something useful, and they're trying to get some information in order to do something useful, in order to, you know, take a ship that's worth $230 million and is filled with many millions of dollars worth of oil and make sure that it gets from where it is to where it's supposed to go without getting raided by pirates or leaking or sinking, and making sure that the correct amount of the right kind of petroleum product gets to the place it's supposed to go. You know, those are complicated and expensive but still useful things that they're trying to do on the web. And in the case of whoever's website, maybe it's to promote yourself to, or to. What it is these things enable the website to do its job for you. Again, it's about the visitors, it's not about you. If you make it all about you, you're free to do that, as long as you're the main person you care about going there. And there is, like my website, one big, you know, there are lots of people who come visit it for whatever reason. I'm shocked, there are people in the world who have my site as their homepage, and I don't. But, okay, if that's what they want to do, that's great. That's not why I made it. I did make it to attract business when I was freelance, but I'm not anymore. I'm not even sure exactly why I do it, but one reason is, if I find something neat on the internet or something that I think of, I write it there so that I can come find it again later, because I'm going to forget. It's like my backup brain. In fact, there's another website. That phrase actually comes from somebody I know. Dory Smith and Tom DeGreen in California. Their website is backupbrain.com. And that's exactly the same thing for them. They post up stuff there for other people to read, but a large reason is just so that they can go back and find out what it was that they talked about 2 years ago that was really cool. Oh, yeah, I seem to recall some travel site that I thought was really cool, and now I need to book a hotel, and where is it? I look through my site, I do a couple search things, I go to Google and search my own site, and it's, oh yeah, it's that site that guy told me about at that conference. Okay, I'll go there.
I have a question. How do you know that people have made your website their home?
Because they've emailed me telling me that. Mm-hmm. Saying, thanks, your page is my homepage. And first time I heard that, I went, ooh. Okay. That changes my opinion of what I should be posting here somewhere. I think websites have sort of, you know, for editors, for professionals, for freelancers, they've sort of, they're part of this continuum. Whatever it was, you know, 100 and some odd years ago, people had calling cards. If they came to your house, you know, people didn't have telephones. People just walked up to others' houses and knocked on the door and came to visit. And if you weren't there, they left their calling card saying, I came by and you weren't home. And, you know, those evolved into business cards that you give to people so they can reach you. You know, since the last century, people expect you to have a phone so that they can reach you. If you don't have a phone now,
Blackberry.
Yeah, whatever. But right now, if you don't have a phone, people think you're a bit odd. I mean, now, you know, if you have email and not a phone, that's probably fine. But you, for the longest time, and probably still, if you don't have a phone number, people aren't going to take you too seriously.
People are going to get annoyed.
Yeah. And, you know, then you needed a computer, because if you're an editor, you have to be able to edit on the computer, because they're going to send you a Word document or something. If you only ever work on paper, you're not going to get that much work these days. And then it came to email. If you don't have an email address now, how are you going to work as an editor, especially a freelancer? It's going to be tough. And it's getting to be that you need a website, not necessarily for people to be able to do work with you, but that they're going to look for that website to figure out whether you're legit. Or at the very least, they're going to put your name into Google, and if what turns up is, you know, your photo...
If it's a crappy editor.
Yeah, or, you know, your photo, you know...
From the university.
Your photo burning, you know, burning the flag at some protest at the university 17 years ago in the archives of the student paper, if that's what shows up top of the list, they're going to go, okay. Well, maybe they'll go, great, you know, storm the Bastille, come on, you're my guy. But if they're a different kind of customer, maybe not. What you want to do is to be able to craft your own message. If you want to put the post, you know, the picture of you burning the flag on the front page, that's your choice. If that's the message you want to put out. But you want it to be your message. And that's why it's good to have a website, because that, you know, chances are, as we'll discuss here, if it's your site and it's about you and you put useful stuff on there, it's going to show up when people look for you. So, here's what we're getting to. Being useful and being usable. When we talked about what people are trying to do on a website, they're trying to get some info, they're trying to do something useful, they're trying to have fun. In order for a website to help them do that, it has to be useful. A good website is useful. You think of the website you use every day, you know, online email, search engine, online banking, whatever, those are useful. They accomplish something for you. And in order to do that, they need to be usable. And the reason I like these blog systems is they sort of bake in a lot of this usability stuff without you having to think about it too much. If you have to build your own website from scratch, it gets difficult because you have to think about how am I going to do things. And I'll use these as an example. Like, you know, here's the West Coast Editor newsletter. Think of it as any kind of magazine. How do you know what this is called?
The title.
How do you know what the title is?
It's bigger.
It's bigger. And where is it? Okay. Now, there's nothing, like, there's no law of physics that says that's where it has to be.
But
that's, it always is, because that's come to be the convention. And also because, you know, if you're thinking about magazines in a bookstore and they're all stacked up in a rack, they tend to be stacked up like this, so the titles stick at the top. You know, if somehow the convention had been that magazines always hang from a rack, it would be this way, but it's not. Right? Now, this is perhaps not the best example, but if it were a typical magazine, and I opened the front cover, what would I see? Are you all psychic? How did you know that? You've seen them before. You've seen lots of them before. Eventually, if you turn past enough ads, what will you see next?
The editor, the list of stuff.
Yeah, the masthead kind of stuff. And then what?
Contents.
Contents, right. Eventually, you'll find the table of contents. Now, there's actually a usability problem with that. Ideally, the table of contents would be the next thing that happens. In fact, on here, because we're not dealing with ads in here, it's actually on the cover, which is really useful. But interesting thing, last month, Philips bought the ad that's in the first page of Time magazine and a few other magazines owned by Time Inc. And in addition to paying for the ad on the inside of the front page, they also paid to have the table of contents of the magazine be the next page. In other words, this one right here. Right? So Philips said, we're going to buy two pages of ads, but we're going to give over our second page of ad to be the table of contents so that when you open the magazine, you get the table of contents right away. You know what that makes me say? I'm going to buy some Philips stuff because they got it, right? And which is exactly what they want. But they're saying that, you know, we're willing to pay for the usability of this to be better. And right now, that's one of the only ways you can, in an ad-saturated world, doing something like that is actually more useful. Yes?
It's actually the element of every time you go back to the index page, you see their ad.
Yes, that too.
Not entirely.
No, I mean, it's very self-serving, but it's also self-serving by being better to your customers, which is nice.
But it's not that altruistic.
No, it's not altruistic at all.
No.
But it's them saying, okay, how can we be the man?
But it is a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody loses by that, right?
It doesn't mess up your format.
But usually you want your format to be on right now because that's where
somebody would be able to just buy that.
Well, then you refuse the ad. That's your choice. But Time would be happy. You know, they were happy.
In the old days, you could always get that anyway. Just pay 10% extra.
Sure. Well, and you do pay. You know, you do pay extra for the inside front page. It's just that it didn't really occur to anybody before to take the second page of their advertising space and make it something that isn't their ad directly. It's still an ad. It's just a more subtle way of telling. You know, saying we're good. You know, maybe they're not, but whatever. Okay. So anyway, as far as websites go, the reason I bring that up is that there are conventions on the web as well. One of them is that typically on a website, let's say you go to one of the popular ones, and you know I've gone to Amazon and I've gone here. I'm looking for something in particular. I'm looking. Okay, we're gonna get this one. Christian's there. And then you go, oh, I want to go back to the home page. How would I do that? Back arrow would work. No, it does on Amazon, but somebody suggested this. This is a convention that's going to be the logo, usually in the upper left or somewhere thereabouts. If you click on that, you'll go back to the home page. 8-10 years ago, there was no way you could rely on that. Now it's getting so that you can. In fact, I'll show you an interesting counterexample.
How do you get the website to show side by side like that?
Oh, this is Firefox, a really good browser that is not Internet Explorer, which sucks. It's got things called tabs. Essentially, instead of a new window, you open a tab. The new version of Internet Explorer will have this because every other web browser, of which there are many, has had this for about 4 years now, and it just takes Microsoft a while to figure out what's going on. I would recommend that you download Firefox and use that exclusively because it also subjects you to fewer security vulnerabilities. But anyway, let me get off my high horse with that. Okay, so here's a daily newspaper in Israel called Haaretz. And this is the English version, and you know, sure enough, there's your link to the homepage. But if you read it in Hebrew...
Can you?
If you can read Hebrew. Look, it's up here. Because Hebrew is written right to left. So in their case, the link is in the other corner because that's the way you read Hebrew. That's, you know, I had to think for a while before I could figure out an example where the link wouldn't be in the upper left. And here's, and I'm sure in Arabic it's the same. And probably in Chinese, but I'm not sure. That depends because there's all sorts of ways to deal with that. Anyway, just that reinforces the point by being an exception. Essentially, the place where you would traditionally start on a print page is the place where you would click to go back to get home. There's a bunch of conventions. Links are usually underlined. If something's underlined and it's not a link, you'll find yourself going, hey, why doesn't this click? So if you're emphasizing something on the web, italicize it or boldface it, don't underline it, because it's not, you know. anyway, these things, there are conventions that have developed themselves. And the nice thing is all these blog things bake those right in. So you don't have to think about it. If you have to build your own website from scratch, you've got to figure all this stuff out or get it wrong and then have people tell you that they can't get around your site. So a useful website must be usable. It must follow the conventions at least as much as they exist or have good reasons to break them, just like in editing. You can break the rules, but you need to know that you're breaking them and why. And it's hard for a usable website to be useless. I found one. Here it is. Clean, nice design, great navigation, pictures, whatever, but there's nothing in it because it's a template. It's very usable, but it's useless unless you're looking for a template. But as a website, it doesn't actually like, do anything. But that's an exception. It's usable, it's easy to figure out what's going on where, but there's nothing there.
Can I just note that Getty Images, they also did the photos for Angelina Jolie.
Oh.
I just noticed Getty Images.
Getty Image, well, they're a big image company. Like yeah. That's what they do. They sell photos. So, and that site isn't from Getty Images. They just put a Getty Images picture in there. An unusable website, a website you can't figure your way around, can never be useful. Because it doesn't matter how awesome the stuff you put on the website is. If people can't find it and can't get to it and can't figure out what to do with it, it's not useful. And here's an example that's not, it's not really accurate, but here's an example of a site that I didn't think was usable and therefore I didn't use it until I had to. And that's Craigslist. Does anybody know what Craigslist is?
Yeah.
Okay, Craigslist is basically an online classified ads site. Started in San Francisco, it's interesting because it's, as far as anybody can tell, it is probably per employee the most profitable business possibly in the world because they make money off, you know, sort of larger placement ads and stuff people get. And there are 17 people in the world that work for this organization. Most major cities have a Craigslist site. And basically, most of the ads are free to post. There are some that make money, and they make a lot of money because they've got millions and millions and millions of users who go here instead of going to the newspaper, instead of going to the buy and sell, instead of going to eBay even a lot of the time.
But how do they make money?
Because some of the ads cost money to make. If you want a bigger ad, if you're a company posting certain types, if you want to post real estate, there's some categories where they actually charge you money for. And if you want, it's the same as with regular classified. If you want it fancy, you got to pay some money. And some people do. But for example, my work, we're posting some jobs right now. And the reason I heard about Craigslist, because everybody in the tech world was talking about it. I came to this webpage and I went, oh, God. Mm-hmm. And then I left. Because I looked at this and went, this cannot possibly be usable. Turns out it is. It's just ugly. But, you know, if you're looking for a job, you go, oh, jobs, I'm looking for...
Writing,
editing. Yeah, let's do that. Writing, editing. I'm a technical writer. Okay, so I want to work, you know, and there we go. Two clicks and I found a job that I might be wanting, right? So, and these ads are free to post and free for people to read, right? So, it's extremely useful. And in fact, it's so useful that you can sort of get past some of the initial shock of how cluttered this page is.
It looks just like a classified ads page.
It does, yeah. And it works fine. It's just, you know, as somebody who likes a bit of white space and color and pictures, I was a little horrified when I first saw it. I've come to see the value in it because we post our ads on there and we get better response from them than we get from most recruiters. And today, because we've got a fairly high-end job, we're going to post at monster.ca. Did you know it costs $600 to put a job on monster.ca?
I sell newspapers, freaking
out. Oh, yeah. I mean, newspapers in general are totally freaking out about this because they traditionally made a lot of money from classified ads, and their lunch is getting completely eaten. Because you put an ad on here, it's up 30 seconds later. You get an email and say, yeah, publish. You could do, you know, and it's up there. You have something you want to sell. You know, I got an old bike I want to get rid of. You put it up here. Probably be gone within a day. Probably have somebody call you. You sell it. Done. So in less time than it would take you to get the ad in the paper, you're already finished.
Apartments,
anything like that. Like, it's, you know, it's a massive... And it's one of these things where there's so many people using it that it has its own network effect. But anyway, that was just an example of but a truly unusable website. Geez, why does it do this to me? Oh, I know why, because it's not actually... let me get back to my page. So, if a site's completely unusable, it's never going to work. So you need, the nice thing is, a lot of these templates and things, they're pretty easy to navigate, and you don't have to think about it because somebody else has dealt with that for you. So, when you're writing on your website, or editing your writing for the website, or editing somebody else's writing for the website, what's different about it? When you're writing for the web, how do you want to write differently? And the key thing to know here is that people don't really read on the web. They skim. So when you're writing on your website, write short. You want to write, it's not that you have to write dumb. It's not that you have to write badly. You just have to write and format in a way that people can skim so that they can figure out whether what you've got is worth reading. And one of the reasons it's like that is that reading on a screen is much slower and more awkward than reading on paper. Even the nice, screens we've got now, compared to something like this, first of all, you can't carry it around with you, even a laptop. I mean, that laptop gets really hot. That's why I have it on a little stand, because if I put it on my lap, it actually hurts. Fortunately, I had all the kids I'm going to have. On paper, the contrast here might not be as high as on here, but the resolution of print on paper is much higher than any screen you're going to get. It's much faster. You get much nicer typography, much more direct control over the typography, how you can read the text. It's much easier on paper than it is on the screen. So people don't read the same way. They won't read paragraphs that are as long. They won't read as much text. And so what you need to do when you write for the web is to write, you can write sentences that are just as long as you would traditionally write, unless you're, Edward Gibbon and Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire with, sentences that are, 3 pages long and semicolons through them. But that doesn't work for anybody these days. What I'm saying is, you can write regular sentences, but paragraphs should be shorter. You will need to, quite often, a paragraph on the web will be a single sentence, maybe two, maybe three. You're not going to get 7 or 8 sentence paragraphs on the web because they turn into these big, ugly blobs of text that people don't read. And here's an example. I stumbled across an article a few years ago by Dr. Kate King from the University of Maryland. Yeah, University of Maryland. And here's the original format of it. First of all, the text is really small. You can deal with that. But this is what it was. Okay, I'm going to scroll through here. Still going. Now, would you read that on the web? I don't even know if I'd read it printed out. So I got it. It's actually pretty interesting. I mean, it's heavily academic. There's a lot of jargon in here. It's pretty hard slogging, but there's some interesting stuff in here. I contacted Dr. King and said, would you mind if I tried editing this so that it would... first thing I asked her is, did you write this for the web? And she said, no, I actually wrote it for an academic journal and it got republished on the web, which made me feel a bit better, because if she's writing about the web, she shouldn't be writing like this on the web. So what I did is I took that article, and just purely as an experiment, I took exactly the same wording. I didn't change a sentence about what she'd written or how she'd written it. But all I did was I started putting in subheadings, which I derived from the paragraph. I broke some of her sentences that were, serial lists into bulleted lists. And that's really all I did, and I took the quotes and made them block quotes and stuff like that. So looking through here, you at least get some sense of the structure of the document, and you can skim through and see if stuff makes sense. I was going to take further steps and never got around to it. One of the other things you can do is you can periodically go through and boldface key sentences so that people's eyes fall on them and they go, oh, that's interesting, and maybe they'll read what's around it. Ideally, I would have gone on and simplified some of the language, not to simplify the ideas, but to get some of the jargon out of it, because when it's on the web, you don't know who's going to read it. She publishes it in academic journals. She can probably rely that there are mostly other sociologists or whoever who understand what she's talking about when she uses some of these. What is deceptive about the narrative is symptomatic technology, blah, 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 that sort of stuff, which, there's a lot of really dense stuff which needs some serious editing anyway, but even in this first step, which took me maybe an hour, this accomplished a lot. And for reading on the web, bulleted lists, subheadings, bold-facing key sentences, that's really useful. And links. The web is about links. And the key thing about links is that, yes, they send people somewhere else, but that's not a bad thing. In the early days of the internet business, people were like, you got to keep, once they get to your site, you got to keep them there. You got to keep them inside the wall. Only link to something else inside the Disney site if they're at the Disney site. Don't ever let them go somewhere else. That's wrong. And I'll tell you who proved that to be wrong. That would be our friend Google. Because what does this web page do? All it does is send you somewhere else. You know, you say, puppies. It gives you another page of Google, and then, I'm somewhere else. I'm now at wherever that is. Puppies for sale. I'm at some really annoying puppy site. But, I've left Google now. But the thing is, Google helped me get there. And they, and my site, I link to stuff all the time. I send people away. And the more you send people away, the more they come back. I have new stuff there every day. And these people, eventually I sent people away enough that they made me their homepage. Same as with Google. I mean, it's a funny thing to think about, but it's the truth. So when you're writing a website, don't only link to your own things, link to something else. If there's somebody else who's written something interesting about a topic that if you found something, link to it. If you have been involved in publishing a book or somebody you know has, or publishing something else, link to it. Link to it at Amazon or link to it on their website. It's a web. And the reason it's a web is because of these links. And that has its own value in that you can see that this slide system is not perfect, but it does the job.
Can I ask you a question? Sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
What is that application where you select the slide? What is that?
What it is it's not an application. It's a web page that I built with. I didn't build it. There's a guy named Eric Meyer who's a famous web designer. He built this thing called S5, which is the simple standards-based slideshow system. And all it is, as I think I showed you at the beginning, it's a single web page, which looks like this. These are all my slides in a single long scrolling web page. And what he's done is he's used some sort of web design trickery to break it into a series of, to apply some layout to that so that each chunk of the page appears as its own slide. And the reason I do that is because A, I hate PowerPoint. B, I have a whole section on my website, penmachine.com/PowerPoint. Talks about why I hate PowerPoint. But because I find PowerPoint annoying and the way it tends to make you do presentations annoying, because it requires that you buy a piece of software in order to do a slideshow, because the files it creates are huge, because you have to have PowerPoint on your machine when you give a presentation. When I'm doing this, I'm going to my website with a web browser, and if this machine broke, I could do it over there, and if we went to another room, I could do it there. And when you get home, you can come here and look at it because it just works everywhere. It's not, the layout isn't exactly the same everywhere, but I don't care. So that it's not an application, it's just a web page. And I could have just done a scrolling web page and just scroll between slides. That would probably work just as well. Yeah.
Is that software available?
I can point you to it. Yeah, it's just, if you actually, I don't know exactly where it is, but if you look at Eric Meyer S5. This is his page about it. It's a little bit geeky to use. It requires that you know some HTML code, but it's really simple. In fact, I'll show you the source code for it. This is what my slideshow really looks like. There's some header stuff, and then you get down each slide. That one where I said start your timers, that's my whole slide for it. Div class equals slide, and then some formatting and start your timers. Or the slide that we're on right now, which is down here.
There we go.
Editing for the web. Here's my. That's everything I had to do to make that slide. It's just points to something. So it's very straightforward. So I just, I edited this page together, and magically it happened. I added in my own graphics to get some stuff.
Can I ask if you're going to link to somebody else's website, you have to ask them.
No. If somebody puts something on the web and they don't want you to link to it, they should take it off the damn web. Because that's what the web is about. If somebody says to you, you need to get permission to link to this website, no, sorry. No. I mean, you would need to get permission to duplicate their content and publish it somewhere else, unless they say otherwise. But the web is about links, and if you have a public web page that you don't want other people to link to, you better put a password on it or something. Because that's what the web is about. Yes?
Back to this editing example.
Yeah.
How did she react? I forgot her name. So how did she react to what you had done?
Well, I asked her, would you mind? And she said, yeah, please do, because I know what's going on. So I showed her to her. She said, oh, yeah, that's much better. And I had heard from her since.
Hired for a next article?
I don't think so. I mean, I think she could do it herself if that's what she chose to do. This is some years ago. I haven't bothered to follow up because I haven't had time. But she knew perfectly well that what was published there was no good for the web. That it was good to have something. Any other questions?
Sometimes yeah. It can be a courtesy to ask because when I was building my website that I haven't launched yet in March, I was going to link to some of my clients. Client is really like a crossover. It's a theater company.
Mm-hmm.
A major theater company in Saskatoon. And so I asked permission, can I put them on my website?
Yeah.
And they said, well, yes, but can you wait until we launch our next season? Because we don't want to give anything away early. And this is that. And so I was glad to know that because if I had gone live and I had literally, somebody had gotten to the
website. Yeah, I mean, certainly there's no harm in asking. In general, somebody's put something on a website, especially if it's like somebody else's blog or page on Amazon or something, if it's up there, there's generally no harm in linking to it, and you don't need to ask permission, but there's certainly no harm, and if, use common sense, something like that, and if they're your customer, it would be wise to say, can I put you on my list of customers, because they may not want you to, or they may want you to link to a certain thing, or, at worst case, they may just get mad at you and not want to hire you again. I mean, there's no rule that says you have to ask permission, but there's also no rule that says they can't get angry at you for doing something that they didn't expect. So, you use common sense there. There's no, unless you want to be har, I'm link pirate. I'm going to link to whoever I want, and I don't care what you say. That's fine. You can do that. Nobody can actually sue you, but they're welcome to get mad at you, so that's fine. Now, here's some of the stuff that I want to talk about specifically. How much time? We got half an hour. Google Juice SEO and Link Love. I'm not expecting you to understand what these mean necessarily. You ask, how did my results get so high up in these Google search results?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a bit about how Google works and how the other search engines work. How many of you used search engines before Google? Do you remember how badly they sucked? You would type in something and you would get 85 results, most of which were pornography, right? Really, it was almost that bad. Because the old search engines before Google, BG as we will call it, what they did is they took the brute force approach. They took all these computers, and the computers went out on the web. They basically acted as if they were people surfing the web, but much faster. And they gathered all the text from all the websites and put them into a giant database. And when somebody asked about puppies, they just looked through all the pages and said, okay, well, this page seems to mention the word puppies an awful lot, so it must be good, and that'll be the first result. But, of course, the more nefarious people on the web figured this out and started putting words puppies, 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 puppies at the bottom of their web pages, every web page that they had, or every page, every term that somebody might be looking for, they would just put that word in over and over again, sometimes in white-on-white text. But because it was computers, they could read it anyway. And basically, it polluted the database, and it's always a battle on the web between the bad guys and the good guys, and in this case, the bad guys were winning. What Google figured out, because it was founded by two very smart PhD students from Stanford University, they said, and you can still find their academic paper, because unlike everything they've done since, academic papers actually have to be out in the public, that showed what they were talking about there. And what they said is, okay, we're going to do that. We're going to index all the words and try and figure out what they mean. But we're also going to do something else. We're going to look at a website and see how many other websites link to it and what those websites are saying in the words that they use or around the links that go into it. And what they did is they seeded their database initially. They said, okay, we're going to manually go out and say, here's a few hundred, I think, websites that we have personally looked at and we know they're good. We know that this particular news site is a legitimate source, and if they link to something, they probably know what they're talking about. So if the New York Times links out to some other website, we're going to say they probably, that's a legitimate link. And they did that with a few hundred websites, and they put that in their database. And then
they created this, you know, sort of now secret algorithm that looks, you know, when somebody searches for puppies, it looks through its database of all the websites that Google has ever looked at and says, okay, when somebody who's building a website or making a blog or doing anything else creates a link and says, puppies, what do they point to? If there are, you know, 56 sites of, you know, reasonable reputation that are pointing to this site and they're all talking about puppies, presumably this site is actually about puppies. And that will be top of the list. And another level above that, if you start getting enough of these inbound links about any sort of topic, you start hitting this thing called PageRank. And Google has a thing called PageRank, where essentially it's the reputation of your website, saying this website is reasonably popular and authoritative. So it, you know, PageRank goes from 1 to 10. And I'm about a, I think I'm about a 7, which is rather high. Because I've been around for a long time, and I've linked to a lot of people, and a lot of people who link to me, links to me. A site that's, you know, sites that have a 10 are sites like Google itself, or Microsoft, or Apple, or, you know, these really big, or CNN, sites that are really big that everybody knows about that have some authority in general. And not authority just in the sense of they're important, but lots of people link to them, and lots of people visit them all the time in order to get information. So they have very high page ranks. Personal websites, there's not many people, you know, really high profile people who have, you know, very authoritative blogs, or, you know, whoever. Like, if Al Gore had a blog, he probably does. He'd have an 8 or a 9. Or somebody, you know, really not just famous, but also well known and well respected by his link love. Well, it's automated. It's just the Google computers. There are farms and farms of computers around the world are constantly looking and saying how many people are visiting these sites and how many people are linking to these sites right now. And, you know, your page rank can fluctuate over time. So mine has slowly crept up from when I just had a website that didn't really do anything that nobody knew about until over time. And I'm probably never going to go past 7 unless, you know, somebody makes a movie about me or something. But that's fine. That's, you know, and that, but what it means is I have a reasonably high page rank. So when I write about something and people start linking to it, then it starts showing up in search results on that topic, like digital pianos or like anything else. So now if I write something about a particular topic and it's not, you know, the most general topic in the world. If I write about, you know, U.S. politics, it's not going to come up high on the list. But if I write about something reasonably obscure, like an aromatic milk foamer, and if the manufacturer of the website doesn't have a of the product doesn't have a website, I'll come up high, pretty high on the list. And over time, well, and a good example here is my wife's website. She has you know what a podcast is? It's basically an internet radio show. You can download it anytime. She has this site, lipglossandlaptops.com. She and her friend have a show that they put out every week. And they started this in February. But because we built it as a blog, and we put lots of useful content in there, and she writes stuff in there all the time, and I linked to it from my site, and some other people linked in, and we made sure that we linked to some other stuff. If you look for makeup... There you go, number one. If you look for podcasts, or if, let's see how that goes. Number one. Partially because it's still a relatively new and geeky thing, there are not a ton of women podcasting in Vancouver right now. But partially it's because we built that site as a blog and we put a ton of content in it. You know, they've done 15 shows since the beginning of March. Every show, they put up notes and links about what products they talked about, what kind of reviews they had, what kind of impressions they had, link to those products, link to other blogs, link to other people who are coming in. And because of that, and because I linked to them right away, and, you know, we've had other people mention them and stuff like that. They actually got in the paper, and we still don't even know how that happened. But presumably somebody searched for Women Podcast Vancouver, because it was Vancouver sent an article about podcasting, and they wanted some by women. It got in the paper. And then more people found out about it. But all that, it's just sort of a bootstrapping thing. So in my case, for years now, Writer Editor Canada, that's me. In fact, let's see what happens with Editor Canada. Now, this is not because I'm the best editor in Canada, because I sure as hell ain't. Oh, that's good. Right on, editors. But I'm at the bottom of the first page, which isn't bad, especially because a lot of them are sort of letters to the editor and things like that. There's two reasons for that. First is that I've established this presence for a long time, and the second is that if you go to my website, the second is if you look not here, but up here, benishi.com, Derek K. Miller, writer and editor, Vancouver, Canada. This is what's called the title bar, and it's when we created that thing, it said BIF. I think probably on our page it says BIF up there. What you want is if there's particular things that you want people to be searching for you about, there's two things you need to do. The easiest one is to make sure that this title bar, which in the code appears in this thing called title, reasonably enough, and that appears throughout my website, title, that is about what you want people to find. And the nice thing about all these blogging tools is that they automatically, you make that thing that you say for the blog title. You give it a title, so you make that relevant. You would say, so-and-so, editor, Ottawa, or whatever. That could be your title. But the nice thing is, whenever you make a post in most of these systems, the title that you write in also, either part or all of it, ends up in the title of the individual page for that post. So if I write about Aerolassie milk foamers, there is actually a page that gets generated that says, Derek K. Miller, writer and editor, Aerolassie milk foamers. And that's another reason why people are finding it, because Google, reasonably enough, figures out that the title of the page should reasonably represent what the page is about. The second thing you need to do, so again, the blog tools handle this automatically. If you write reasonable headlines that are about what you're writing about, they will show up in Google eventually. And elsewhere. Remember, well, I'll get to that, but search engines aren't everything. The second thing you need to do is when you're writing, write about what you're writing about. Because all Google really does, and all any of these things ever do, is they look at the text. This is my next bit here. It's all about the words. Even though there's tons of pictures and flash movies and animations and photos and everything on the web, all the search engines and most of the people on the web care about the words. It's the text that gets indexed, it's the text that gets searched, it's the text that gets linked to, and it's the text that people read. Unless it's a photography site. And even then, the captions are what people figure out what's going on about. It's really about the words, and that's good news for you, because words are what we're about. So if you can write and construct words well, I actually had an online slight argument. I wrote an article on my website last year, and this is where this SEO comes in. Search engine optimization is a business. There are hundreds or thousands of companies around the world that will say, and you probably get these, once you set up a business, they start emailing you, we could get you number one in all the search engines for only $865. One thing that puzzles me is if you look for their website, they're very rarely high in the list for search engine optimization, for example. And the thing about that is that I think this is a bit of a broad brush, but most of that business is bogus. And I wrote a post basically saying you don't need search engine optimization most of the time. Because if you build web pages that are built with standardized code like these blog sites do, and if you have titles that are about what they're about, and you link to relevant places and other people link to you, and you write about what you're writing about, people will find you. And you'll show up higher in the list. Because that was Google's great insight, is that what they've done by taking this link love, which is what people call it when you link to other people. What Google did is they recruited everybody on the web who's building websites and basically got them to work for Google for free. Because every time that you make a link to somewhere, you're basically saying, this is a place worth linking to. And Google is saying, aha, therefore, that link is a little vote saying that is a place that's worth going to. And in fact, they have some technical ways for you to be able to link to something without doing that. It's a little sort of, I won't describe it technically how it works, but you can link to something and tell Google, I don't really want you to count this, because I think it's bad. So you can link to something saying, this sucks and I don't want to give it any link love. But usually that's not even worth doing, because if you're saying it sucks, then it will come up high in the list when people say, you know, whatever sucks. That's how it will come up. Yes. Well, the title is... Yeah, well, there are various levels of semantic structure to a web page. And for example, this is what's called a level one heading. It's enclosed in H1 tags for heading level one. And Google looks at that and says, well, that's probably the title of the page or the title of that section of the page. And it does look at the top of the page more than the stuff that's further down. So, you know, your titles and your text are important. And think of it not quite as if you were writing newspaper. But make sure that when you're writing stuff, I mean, yeah, you can be clever if you want, but if you're clever all the time, you'll only get search results from people who are looking for clever things, I guess. You need to have the words that mean things, but that's not hard to do if you're a writer or a header.
Some search for the blogger,
yeah,
or for the WordPress. Which part of that?
Okay, let's let's go back to our blogger one. Okay, so we're here. If we look at our settings here, so basic here. Title, if we say here, Biff the Editor in Ottawa, that's the title. That would be the top level title of the homepage. And then in the description you can say, Biff is an experienced editor who has worked. Organizations in Ottawa for 27 years. And add your blog to our listings, you know, presume a bunch of other options there. But if we save the settings here, and what you have to do there is, because Blogger generates it has to regenerate the files when you change things, you say, okay, I'm going to republish. And then it just regenerates them. WordPress doesn't do that, it does it on the fly constantly, so you don't have to do this republish thing. But the instructions are reasonably clear. So now, here's Biff's description. His title up here is Biff the Editor in Ottawa. So it's as simple as that, really. And then when you write a post, so say I actually write a new post. So here I'm going to write a new post for this. This title is that level one heading that I'm talking about. And so for each post, what I type in there will show up after Biff the Editor in Ottawa on the impact. I'll show you how it works. So if I look at the individual page for this post, you look at the top, it says Biff the Editor in Ottawa, colon, hi, I'm Biff and I can edit stuff for you. That's this headline, which has gotten plugged into the top there. So this is all happening automatically. You would have to do all this manually. So this all has value because it means that every post you make has its own title, which will get indexed and which people will find. But it's not all about the search engines. That's like one way that people find you. The way most people are going to find you is when you give them your business card, or when you meet with them, or when you do a presentation like this and say, my website is penmachine.com, or when you send them a free pen in the mail, or when you have, in fact, what I should have is I should have a sticker with my URL on the back of my laptop when I'm sitting in a room, or a t-shirt. You know, this, I got this from a guy down here, it says lockernome.com. He's the guy who runs a conference that I got this t-shirt at. So it's on here, and people will go, oh, what's Lockernome? And they'll type it in. What you should have is your web address, and especially when you have your own domain. That's a more valuable piece of information to give to people, probably even than your email address or your phone number. First of all, phone numbers are hard to remember. And second of all, if they have your website, presumably on your website, you'll have your email address. And with any luck, your email address will be, you know, contact at whatever your website is. So it's probably the most important thing to give to people besides your name. Maybe even more so. If they think, oh, this was a cool person, and they had that really, you know, funky, or here I have this business card, I'm going to go check out that website. And they're not doing that through Google. They're just doing it because they heard about you. So maybe it's search, but a key part of it is, you know, and I'm always amazed at companies that have websites and they don't plaster that address on everything, on their tote bags, on the sign in front of their store, on the mats on the floor when you walk in. It should be everywhere because it's the easiest way for people to find you. They don't have to talk to anybody. They can do it in the middle of the night. They can be anywhere in the world. And it's easy. And if it's a decent website, they'll get it. They have the opportunity, especially if you put a lot of material in there, to get a deep and significant impression about who you are without having to take any of your time to do, make that happen. They can, they'll be able to make a decision over whether you're somebody that they want to work with without, you know, sort of all that business frictional stuff of having to contact you and maybe find out, you know, what you do, what do you not do, can you send me your portfolio, all that sort of stuff, like you used to have to do. Yes?
If you want to keep your blog on the site, do you have only one page to do it? If you wanted to list your services, do you just list them in a...
Well, you can, like I was talking about before in WordPress, for example, you can set up separate pages that are about different topics. So you can have a, you know, in a, you know, my history page, you can have a my work samples page. You can set up, you know, you can set up a sort of traditional site structure. I would recommend that you have your blog as your home page, because one of the other key things about Google and about people is that they like to see stuff that's new. And so, for example, on my page, you come to my home page, the newest stuff is right there at the top of the homepage, every time. And if they have this RSS feed thing and they want to subscribe to your site, they'll always see the new stuff. And people like new stuff. If you're updating all the time, even if it's relatively trivial things, you know, what I'm doing right now, or what, you know, I worked on this project and there was a particular challenge and this was it, or, you know, I got this cool, spiffy new piece of software. Whatever you're talking about, just that there's anything there that shows that you care about what you're doing, that you care about, you know, and it's not like you have to do it every day. I mean, on my company's website, I updated most days, but there was a while there where we updated the blog, you know, once every 3 weeks, and people in the shipping industry were like, wow, you update your site all the time! Because their sites, you know, they're these massive, you know, monstrosities that have, you know, listings of all their ships and all this stuff, but they don't change, you know, unless they get a new ship, which happens, what, every 2 years? You know, and then somebody has to go through the whole process of, oh, we got to talk to the web guys and get the new stuff on the page, and it takes 3 weeks just to get it up there. You know, ours is just like, yeah, we post, you know, I saw this link about their widening the Panama Canal. Isn't that cool? Post. And that was it. And you know, they think that's great. And they come to our site as this little tiny company in Vancouver because we have some interesting stuff there that they like to look at. Yeah?
Sam, on
video
sites, do you want to log this?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't use that a lot. There are some sites, it depends. There are ways, like, for example, you can set up, in fact, I don't really know the answer to that question. Some things, they have an easy way just to get a straightforward link that will link directly to that story, and that's what you want to put in your blog. Some other ways, they may be tied into a particular blog tool where you click on it and it'll automatically start a post in your blog software. Or you can put a link in your bookmarks that lets you do that on any page. In fact, I think Blogger has one called Blog This. Where do they do that?
Well, that's like on the Globe Mail or other sites where the BBC has it as well.
To be honest, I really don't know what they're doing there. Try clicking and see what happens. I don't know. But no, I don't know what's going on with that. Because there's some technological okay, so let's say Last Militants.
Sorry.
You go below the picture, there was something that said latest comments.
Start
a conversation.
Okay, well, this would be comments on their site.
Maybe it wasn't the Globe, but it was usually, you know, up top it's in print.
BBC.
You know,
BBC.
Okay.
BBC.
Yeah. BBC is really on the ball with this stuff. Okay. Sorry, where was that?
RS.
So let's
see. It tells you what it all looks up about. RS.
Yeah, this tells you the RSS stuff, but email this to a friend, printable version. The difficulty with having a blog this link is that usually depends on you using a particular tool in order to blog. There's not a standard way of just sucking that into any old blogging tool. Maybe there is that I don't know about. So, I mean, you know, the simplest thing is usually you find an article, you just go up here and copy and paste the address from the top into your blog software. Or you can create a what is blog this? So if you drag this link up here, oh, I guess I need the links bar. Sorry. Usually there's a bookmarks bar up here. If you drag this up here into the bookmarks bar, see that blog this I just put up there? I just dragged it from the page up into here. Now any page I'm on, let me see, if I'm here and I click blog this, it opens up a little blogger window with a link to the BDC homepage already in. So that's handy, and I think WordPress has something similar.
Would you have to have one of those blogger.com sites, though, to do that?
Yes.
That
would only work if you had a Blogger account. WordPress probably has some other thing called Press This. And, you know, so that's what I mean. It's sort of tool-dependent on how they set that up. But that's just basically a link to your posting thing, and it automatically grabs whatever's in the address bar. So it's not high-tech, but it makes it easier. Oops. So let's go back. Standards are good. One thing I wanted to show you here, that guy Dave Shea, the template we picked, the guy who used to sit next to me, he set up this site a few years ago, which is really neat. And this is one of the things that's interesting about, this is what enables that template change to be so easy. The code of a web page. It used to be that when you built a web page, you would put all the formatting into the web page itself and say, I want the font to be this color, and I want a picture over here, and I want a heading like this, and you'd have to do that over and over for every page. Using a sort of more modern templating systems, you could do something like what he's done here. He did set up this website called the Zen Garden. And it's just this page that sort of talks about web pages. But what he did is he made it so that anybody could take the basic code, the text of this website, and he said to people, submit me designs that I can apply to this website. And he made it so that you can just go over here and click on this. And this is exactly the same web page. But he's applied a different style to it. These are the same words. And in fact, it's the same. If you go view source, this isn't even a different web page. It's the same web page, but he's applied a different style to it. And that's
so
this
could
one.
You take the view source and copy and paste it onto your own web page and steal it design?
Well, you couldn't do it with just the HTML. You can sort of. Most of these designs are set up in such a way that you can do that to a greater or lesser degree. Most web designers are happy to have you look at what they've done and try and learn from it. That's what that view source is really good for. But they usually would say to you, can you change it a little? And maybe give me credit for having done the first bit. Or the templates in particular for the blog site, they're all set up, you know, they've licensed them so that, yeah, use it. Just use it, play with it, change the graphics, do whatever you want with it. Don't sell it usually, but, you know, use it as a basis to learn. And in this case, here, this is, again, same page, different layout, same text. So that is Mozart. And he's got hundreds and hundreds of these now. Again, same page. Same text. So this is, it's not quite this easy on the blog sites, but what this shows you is that as web design has matured, it's made it so that you can apply a different design to the same content. And again, Google doesn't care about the design. They care about the content. So what it means is you can focus on the content, and if you get a talented web designer to work with you, they can make it look really nice, regardless of what the stuff underneath is. So, let's get to the end here. What's my advice? Go home and set this up right now. If you don't already have a website, you don't have to set one up that's going to be your public site right away, but I say take the 15 minutes and see how it works. Start playing around with it. Have fun with it because it's worth getting started. And then build it over time. Start figuring out how you can work within the limitations of what exists there and make it your own. And write the content in the bulleted lists with the headings and the useful stuff and link to things. Write well because that's what you do. Be useful. That argument I was having about search engine optimization, how you don't need it, somebody came back to me when I said that. Said, you know, I work for a website that sells shoes, and there's thousands of websites that sell shoes. We have to hire these search engine optimization people in order to get any kind of search results in order. And I said to him, no, you don't. What you need to do is take the money that you would have spent on those search engine optimizations and either pay somebody or allocate some time for somebody who's an expert in your company to write up every day or every week or every month some reviews saying, here are three hiking boots from our website. One of them is $60, another one's $120, and the other one is $480. Here's why they cost differently. The $120 one pretends to be a real hiking boot, but it's just kind of fancy, and the soles are actually fairly slippy, and it's not a good value. The $60 one's a better buy if you're just, you know, walking in the woods. If you're going to climb Mount Everest, you need to spend the $480. Give a little bit of a review like that. If you do that every week, people who are looking for shoes and who are reading about shoes are going to find out, and they're going to link to those reviews, and you're going to get better search results for people looking for shoes than anybody who paid some company to sort of game the system. And totally aside from the search results, when somebody comes to your site looking for shoes, they're going to go, hey, they have all these articles that are really useful and really tell me stuff I didn't know about shoes before. And I'd be willing to pay these people an extra $5 per pair of shoes over the other site that just has shoes, you know, in big, huge lists and doesn't tell me anything about them. I'd pay these people more money because they're giving me value in telling me, you know, I'll buy the $60 shoes because you said that the $120 ones aren't worth it. And I know that these other people have them for $52.95. I even know that Walmart are giving them to me for $45, but I'd rather buy them from you because you told them why I shouldn't be spending the $120 on the fancy ones. And I think that's true because in my experience, when you do that, when you make your website useful for people, for visitors, for the real people who are really coming to your site to find something out, that's when you are useful. You're worth money to them. And as an editor, if you have a website, you know what to give away. I'm giving away hundreds of thousands of words that I have written over the past 6 years on this website. Now, they're not words that I probably would have gotten paid for anyway, most of them. Especially when I'm talking about, you know, what a bad day I had when my daughter barfed all over me or whatever. But, you know, some of them are. I could have taken some of those articles, and I probably still could, and gotten paid to publish them. You know, that digital piano article, I bet I could. I did another one on when I, you know, because I'm a musician. I bought a new guitar last year, and it's a big article. Like, it's, you know, not take you, take E. Okay, so where's my guitar article? Learn it. No, no, not that one. Sorry.
Headphone albums. What's that?
Headphone albums. Where was that? I saw that.
About women in the web.
Well, okay. Sorry. Okay, so this, you know, this is just. You hear some albums that I like listening to in headphones. You know, I could have put that in a music magazine. It's just my opinion, but I put it there. But here's, you know, this is a good example. Buying a good cheap electric guitar. This is the one I ended up buying. Here are all the other guitars I looked at. And I say something about each of them and why I didn't buy them and why I bought the one I did. And, you know, so now if you look for cheap guitar. Cheap guitar, number one in the world. Because I did this, right? Yes.
I'm going to question not related to cheap guitar. If you open your website up for comments,
yeah.
If you have that feature, people can comment on your articles. Is that sort of the, would that potentially be the cyber stalker's dream?
Well,
is
yeah.
Is there any control that you can exert over?
I'll have to make it the last answer because we're out of time. But comments are a mixed blessing. I have comments on my site, and I use an obscure service to do them. The first problem you have is spam. Just like in anything else, people find comments and they want to post links to all their Viagra sales websites and whatever else in there. And you have, what it means is you have an administrative burden of getting rid of that stuff. There are some automated ways to try and prevent it, but some gets through, just like an email. So there's that hazard. The other hazard is not necessarily stalkers, but just people who want to bother you. A cyber stalker, if you have a website and you put your home address on it, that's not necessarily a wise thing to do. But if you say I'm in Vancouver, you know, you have to gauge how much you want to give up in publicizing your software. And as a business, that's less of a concern. But if you're doing it, you know, don't put your home address on there necessarily. Have it on your business card, but not on your website. I don't have it on my website. I don't mention my wife's and children's names, for example. I talk about them, but I don't say their names. Other people mention their names, but don't put their pictures on there. There's different gauges of that. But what comments do is they give you an interactive community with the people who come to your site. People who might not bother emailing you might post a comment. Plus, that's public. That's an advantage because if they say who they really are, and there are mechanisms where they might have to sign in you know, the more hurdles you put in there where they have to sign in with a real email address in order to comment, you get fewer of those problems. And in some of the systems like WordPress, I think, you can turn comments on and off selectively for posts. You can make it so that after a certain amount of time, any given post stops accepting comments, or you can turn them off at any time. So you've gotten 40 of them, or you've gotten 4, and that's enough, I'm going to turn them off on that post now. And I think Blogger lets you do this too, or you can just not have them at all. Initially, I would recommend not having them to start with, and then turn them on, because what that means is people can come to your website and leave comments on what you've written. And sometimes they're not too nice about it, but whatever. That it can create a nice interaction, but it's not necessary. We don't have it on the blog that I run for my company, for example, just because we don't want to have the overhead of it. We might turn that on eventually. I have it on my own site, but I didn't for years. So it's a judgment call there. You know, as I said, start and then build incrementally. And, you know, go to other blogs. Go to my site and find other people's sites that you find interesting and see what they do and ask them, you know, how do you find it when you do this or that or whatever else and that. But get started, because you can start simple. And then you build from there.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.